Thank you all for coming. Hope you all had a good day. Sitting, walking, talking, swimming, eating, resting. If this is take time, it's okay. My name is Jonathan Frerichs. This is a session in the series about just peace and global hotspots. And tonight's focus is really going to be on just peace. The last couple times I've mentioned it, and I haven't gotten to it. We've had such good discussions the last time out, and the first time I think I talked too long. But those of you who are here, you can relate what we've said about Israel-Palestine to what happens now. Those of you who weren't here probably know something about the Israel-Palestine conflict, and you can apply it. Or if you know some other situation that is not peace, it might be in your community, it might be in our nation, it might be in another part of the world. And I encourage you to relate that to what we do now. I'm not going to go into any more details. Tomorrow I'll spend a bit of time on the conflict in Colombia, another one where the U.S. as a nation is deeply involved and where we can learn quite a bit about the options of peace and non-peace. So tonight what I'd like to do is, first of all, offer you an evangelical challenge that I heard just recently. And I think it's quite relevant because I live overseas and my mind and my brain is not here in this society as much as, nowhere near as much as yours. And so it's helpful for me to understand what people are thinking and saying. After the evangelical challenge, I want to spend a little bit of time on a biblical call and an ecumenical idea about just peace. And then have your involvement on trying to flesh out those ideas with how you see them. I've tried what I'm going to do with various nationalities who visit Geneva, and it hasn't failed yet. And this is the first time I've tried it with a group of Americans, so I'm looking forward to that. So be ready to get wise and engaged in about half an hour. I had done some Googling of how many times words appear in the Bible back a while ago, and I noticed that of the triple crown of the Christian life and of the nature of God, faith, hope, and love, guess who's there the most? Faith, hope, and love?
Love
is 500 times. You drop down to 250 for faith. You drop down to about 125 for hope. I don't know if this means anything, but Michael does it, so I was pleased to see him doing it because I've done it too. And interestingly enough, right there, so you've got the gold medal is love, the silver medal is faith, and the bronze medal is hope. And right there on the same level at 250 with faith is peace. Peace is mentioned as often as faith in the Bible, according to one of these evangelical search engines, you know, Crosswalk, I think, was the one I used. And I think that's not surprising that it shares the silver medal, because it cannot happen otherwise, really, I think, either by grace or by faith or by both. And it's certainly inseparable from a trusting relationship with God and with other people. If you think of peace as inseparable from a trusting relationship, the trusting relationship being the good faith that we are given and that we are able to exercise, Pelagius or Augustine or anybody. So with that little intro, I want to mention what's going to happen next year. And mind you, I have no illusions that what the international ecumenical community is doing is even known to you. But if you're a member of any of the sort of average type historic churches of the USA, your church is a member of the World Council of Churches. There are 350 denominations in 120 countries representing about 600 million people. We have been together since 1948 in a world council of churches. You've got a city council sometimes, you certainly have national councils, you have continental councils, All Africa Council of Churches, Christian Conference of Asia, and you have the World Council of Churches. And next year, on the back of many, many years of thinking hard and doing some good work in the areas of peace and justice are almost always linked, peace with justice, in ecumenical circles. We're going to have this International Ecumenical Peace Convocation in Kingston, Jamaica in May. And one of the main parts of it is going to be a declaration on just peace. as a guide for the conference. We're not going to sit there and debate a document for a week. We're going to have leaders from networks, churches, and organizations networking, doing workshops together, studying the Bible together, and maybe getting some guidance from this ecumenical declaration. But first, the evangelical challenge that I was privileged to hear just a couple of weeks ago by a guy named Brian McLaren, who has some books here in the bookstore, I noticed. And he had a great line when he started talking. He said he was such a hardcore fundamentalist that he was so hard that they envied the Southern Baptist Church across the street. And one of the biggest fears was that they ever got involved in one of those ice cream socials, because it might lead to the social gospel. He, in some of his work, has laid out what could be some new visions about peacemaking in and for North America. And I'd like to spend a little bit of our beginning on that and show you, share with you four of what he calls the dominant stories, stories that have the power to build up or tear down, stories that pretty much describe, by stories he mean, ideas that describe how people and groups of people and whole societies act, courses they follow, all right? And among those dominant stories, I'll just share four. He actually has six. But there's the domination story. And according to McLaren, domination story is, if we were in charge, everything would be fine, we would be safe. If we were in charge, we would be safe. It goes very well with the idea of empire, with hegemony, with controlling other people, obviously. In the Bible, each time he gave one of these, he said, who's somebody who shows it in the Bible? Well, Pilate, Caesar, the Sadducees. They're sort of living by a domination story, according to McLaren. And interestingly enough, he said, this is the dominant evangelical story today. The dominant evangelical reading of the Bible, actually, and the use of the Bible. And each time he gave a story, he had a very sharp little summary that this is really a story of us over them. All right? Pretty obvious. Second one, revolution story. If only they weren't in control. If only we could get back at them. If only we could get into control. In the Bible, it was the zealots. Revenge, take over, gain power. The main use of this, according to McLaren, is attacking the U.S. government. The attacks on the U.S. government. It's the revolution story. And you can think of groups who sometimes take this quite far. Second Amendment, for example. The right to keep and bear arms. And the little summary was us versus them. Now, is this a good story for peace? Is this a good story for peace?
No.
He has six of them. I'll just give you the four. The fifth one was the isolation story. Peace and security through withdrawing from a corrupt, doomed majority. If only we could be left alone to be ourselves. An elite, a remnant, a group that sets itself apart, but that disengages from the wider society. And they tell themselves they live by an isolation story. And in the Bible, he mentioned, he thought this was the story of the Essenes, you know, the people who gave us they did something good, right? They gave us the Dead Sea Scrolls. And he didn't have a particular use for it, but I think you have a bit of it out here in this state, actually. I keep hearing about people who want to come move here and live in the Mazama Valley and just sort of withdraw, you know. Is that a fair comment? I don't know. Accumulation story. Amassing possessions in a competitive economy. If only we could buy, enjoy, stockpile everything as more and more of what we desire, we'd be okay. We'd do well. Pretty obvious what the use of that one is, I think. It's kind of a bad story of our own economy. This one, by the way, the last one, I'll do it first here. Us competing with them. And I think the us becomes quite troubling if you start to see the world in terms of you and your group competing with them. I didn't put this one in under isolation. It's us without them. And then you can understand maybe that he had a seventh story. There are six of these. And his seventh story, after saying that basically this one takes over all the rest at this level, it's the sort of the main theme. Oh, the accumulation story in the Bible is the rich landowner or the unfaithful steward. And the seventh story is of course the gospel story. And to summarize it in this way, so we'll just put good news. And the little summary was, and I think it's quite nice to see something so simple. Some of us, for all of them. McLaren's little summary of the good news story. Jesus proclaiming not the love of power, which in a sense is all of the others, but the power of love. Not the dominator Jesus, not the revolution Jesus, not the victimization Jesus, the accumulation Jesus. And inviting us to synergize ourselves, harmonize our lives. We heard the word harmony in some of our other sessions here this week. Harmonizing our life, our calling, our work, our efforts to be part of Christ's story, God's story. Now, of all the six, I have four of them here. Obviously, none of these are a recipe for peace. This one clearly is. Switching now, could I have the overhead to
could
the...
Could I ask a question before we
please,
do
please.
That? Or make a comment?
Yeah.
Okay, I belong, as probably a number of people in this room and at this camp belong, to the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.
Amen. I do too.
Well, I object to that word evangelical there.
Yeah.
Being used that way.
Well, it's capital E.
That is just very annoying to me. And you hear it in the media, they talk about the evangelicals, and it's like, okay, what you're who you're talking about is not me.
That's right.
Right.
I'm sorry, I just had to get that out.
No, I agree.
we know
what this word means. It means the gospel. It means this.
Yes. And then you're putting it up there, you know, and it's like, no. Okay.
Yeah, I was. What's an alternative? I mean, you can say fundamentalist, but that's not quite accurate.
It's not. No, I don't know.
Campbell soup.
Oh, yes. I'm afraid I also have another objection.
Okay.
With the revolution story, I know some revolutions obviously are, and most of the successful ones are about the love of power, about wanting to stage a coup and take over. But I think that's not all revolution can be. It can be. It can simply mean an overturning of the dominant system. And I think in this case, all around the world, the dominant system is the love of power and the love of money.
Mm-hmm.
And some people who might call themselves revolutionaries of all types might say, well, we want the power structure to be gone. We don't want some people to be more powerful than others. So I don't think that can really be encompassed in, you know, the story of, like, the zealots or, people who...
Yeah, this was just a Bible reference.
Right.
I think I understand you, but anybody got a response to that? Which allows this to be actually expanded to cover what you're saying, I think. What happens in revolution after revolution?
Change.
The ones that come to power become the oppressors.
Yeah. But not necessarily. If a revolution is, some people want revolution because they don't want people to be in power. If they don't want to be in power themselves.
Well,
if there's an oppressive regime, you know, there are some people who are going to be, well,
yep,
we want a republic, and there's some people who say we don't want a state at all.
Sure.
People say lots of different things, and all those are revolution, but they, you know, if you're I mean, if you want to say, okay, we want the world to be loving and kind and we don't want war anymore, we want people to get along, that would be a revolution. That'd be
yeah.
a pretty huge revolution, you know?
Okay.
I just wanted to point out that it seems like from the story perspective, those are the same dominant stories in movies.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got man versus man, man versus the establishment, man versus self, man versus supernatural.
Mm-hmm.
That's what money acts like a lot, aliens. And it seems like a completely different story is needed for peace.
You know, I realize I just made a big boo-boo. Because this is better. It's
yeah.
some of us for all of us.
Yeah.
There's no them. Sorry. But, you know, I think this answers a lot of the questions we might be having if we think in that way. And it's really been a theme, and what I've been saying for the last 2 weeks is we as Christians can work on any issue in the world as long as anybody who isn't a Christian can look at us and say, hey, I agree with what you're doing. And I say to Muslims, and I talk about nuclear weapons, we need to get a nuclear weapon-free zone in the Middle East. And, you know, can we work together on that? They want to do it. They think the first thing some of them think of is, not all of them, but some of them think, oh, this is a good way to get Israel, because Israel has the weapons. And if it's appropriate, I say, if I feel that might be an issue, I say, this isn't about getting Israel. It's about security for everybody in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't lose them. You don't lose them, because their faith supports that premise. Just as ours does. And so I think this is a really good marching order in very practical terms, not airy-fairy terms, for what the gospel means in public life on tough issues. And it's a good segue to what's here. Did that thing work?
I don't know, I didn't turn on.
Push.
I think it might.
There, here it comes. Okay. What I'm going to do now is show you a little bit of a paper that started out as an Ecumenical Declaration on Just Peace. The first draft was 25 pages. It was put up by lots of brainy people, some of whom you know, in this country and other countries. After looking at it, we decided we didn't want to fight the battle of the worldviews, and so we went down to 6 pages, and we put the first 4 pages sort of in the hands of Scripture and extrapolations of what we know from peace about peace from the Bible. And then we go to some application of it, sort of in this point of view. Just by chance, I had to hear this from McLaren, but we'll come back to that. Gospel according to Windows.
No.
So, what I want to just share with you can see at the top, International Ecumenical Peace Convocation, Kingston, Jamaica. The working title, this is second draft, it's not a final document by any means, we're in a third draft, but a peace that surpasses all understanding, a quote from Scripture. And I want to just share this verse with you. Verse 3, chapter 3. Let the Scriptures speak. Our biblical tradition offers us insights into the interweaving of justice and peace. As one psalmist proclaims, justice and peace shall embrace, Psalm 85. This embrace is both promise and present, a hope for the future and a gift here and now. Peace is God's gift to a broken but beloved world, today as in the lifetime of Jesus. Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. I do not give to you as the world gives. John 14. Through the life and teachings, the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ, we understand peace that is just. He told us to turn the other cheek, love our enemies, pray for our persecutors, and not use deadly weapons. His peace is infused by the spirit of the Beatitudes. A later section that's pretty easy to take in to give you a bit of the flavor and the basis for our discussion, which will start soon, is a section that reads...
Yeah.
Anybody can speed read? What did you just read? Tell us about it. Here.
It's all true.
Okay, sustaining the journey. Thank you. Sustaining the journey. So I think it's also quite accessible without any preparation. And you tell me if it isn't. Okay. I'm not sure exactly how to say who this is written for. It's sort of written for, you know, leaders of networks and organizations and things like that. But you guys are leaders. You're at this class on a Wednesday night in Holden. So Just Peace is a journey into God's purpose for humanity and all creation. Attributes. How do you sustain a journey like that? The journey is difficult. Along the way, we must face up to truth, because it will not yield. We recognize our own complicity with violence and turn away from it. Sorry. We learn to give up looking for justifications of what we have done. We train ourselves instead in the practice of justice, in making reparations, in giving and receiving forgiveness, and in learning reconciliation. I'll skip the long part. And the journey is not possible alone. If groups of Christians go their own way, the journey of just peace slows and stops. The church divided about peace and churches torn by conflict or in conflict with each other have little credibility as a witness or a worker for peace. The church's power to work for peace depends on a common purpose that is found in the service of peace despite differences of doctrine and church order. This purpose is also shared by people of other faiths and people of goodwill. We do not journey alone. We travel as a community, sharing an ethic of peaceable virtues that includes forgiveness, love of enemies, respect for the life and dignity of others, restraint, gentleness, and mercy. We share the spirit of self-sacrifice. In loving communities of faith that journey together, there are many hands to unburden the weary and ready arms to steady the faint. People who have suffered much find the strength to say, "I forgive." The power of the gospel enables them to leave behind even the unimaginable burdens of personal and collective sin, of anger, bitterness, and hatred, which are the legacy of war and of other forms of conflict. Forgiveness does not erase the past, but when we look back, we remember the past with memories that are healed. Our burdens rest beside the way, and we're free to travel on. We journey with people who are different from us. There are many kinds of people with whom to share the road. We learn to move beyond defending what is ours and towards living generous, open lives with all our neighbors who are gifts from God. Strength for the journey is found in honoring them and drawing out the image of God which every person bears. There's abundant fruit along the way. Walking the path of Jesus, his disciples learn to give their lives in ways big and small in the service of justice and peace. The many faces of violence, interpersonal, family, community, national, international, structural, challenge Jesus' followers to exercise an active nonviolence with other Christians and with other faiths. With time and dedication, more and more people become peacemakers, able to overcome the divisions of race, nationality, class, standing with the impoverished, and reconcile with those who have been estranged. They find harmony with others and see the gifts of creation used for the common good. The journey is interesting, finally. We see the world with new eyes. We find our feet as peacemakers. We discover people from different disciplines and walks of life, building peace, preventing violence, and resolving conflict. We see others not as strangers or threats, but as fellow human beings with whom we share both the road and the journey. Time for a couple of comments, questions, reflections, and then we'll go into action where you take your own temperature as peacemakers. Yes?
Jesus' words that he came to not bring peace, but it was in there.
But the sword.
No, it wasn't. Anyway, but people that are working for peace without justice, would that be an example of because you're going to have peace on my terms.
No, there's a section about that. You know, you calm down the killing or the violence, the guns, the argument, but there isn't peace.
Right.
That's where the justice thing.
Yeah.
Hard to separate. Yes?
It was just a cognitive speed bump when you were starting and scrolling down. Talking about just peace. And so you get both of them together, and it seems like peace passes all understanding, but justice may not. And that justice has some understanding that we need to build it on.
Uh-huh.
And so it doesn't seem like a just peace could pass all understanding. It needs some structure.
I'll take note. If that helps you, Now I'm going to ask you to join in. I think what we'll do is we'll cover that screen again. Can we have a non-Bible to put in front of it? Here, renewing songbook. Renewing workshop, looks like it'll work. Just lean it against the lens. Later, at the end of the declaration, in an effort to try to come to grips with the nature of peace as being something that does surpass all understanding. We have four themes, and if you open up this little brochure, it's about the meeting in Jamaica, but if you open the little brochure on the inside, you see the four themes. And we can think of these as obviously just four different things, but they may help. They certainly do help people working for peace locate where it is their ministry calls them, how they work. But they also help us to understand that peace, as we usually use the term, is sorely underrepresented by the word. And I think this has never probably been truer for the whole human family than it is today, in the sense that we have many more connections to each other than we ever did. I mean, you could imagine there was a time when this valley was inhabited by 45 Native Americans, perhaps, or down by the lake, peace in the community, peace with the next couple of valleys, that was about the size of it. They had no doubt many of the same complex issues we did, but what they did was not affecting people on the other side of the world the way it is today. So in my little metaphorical mind, I want to say these four themes are like four wheels. You know, the most stable vehicle has four wheels, and the most capable vehicle has four-wheel drive. So it might be helpful to think of each of these themes as a wheel. If you try to ride a unicycle, you're not covering the subject matter very fully. It's pretty easy to knock you over. Violence, conflict, different forms of non-peace. If you have two wheels, you're on a bicycle, you can still knock them over, two of the themes. Three wheels, you're on a tricycle, they fall over funny ways, forward on both sides. But four wheels are stable.
And I think it's on the size of the axle. Sorry.
Yeah. I think it's interesting to think of that, because we're trying to construct a strong framework that draws in many things which you wouldn't normally think of as peacemaking, without saying peace is everything. I think the people who are so committed to peace and say peace is the root cause of all the problems don't really tell you much. So what I'd like to ask you to do is pick the theme of these four: peace, community, earth, marketplace, peoples, and understand peoples also in the framework of nations, because it really is the most international. And ask yourself, where you're most interested in the theme of peace. Under which of these headings? Which of these four themes? Which one relates most to your interests? Where you spend your time, where you focus your attention? And maybe, where you even have a Christian calling of some kind. You can go beyond the descriptions that are there. There, that brochure theology. It's not meant to be comprehensive. Then I'd like to ask you to spend some minutes now in maybe groups of three. Turn to the little groups of three, and just share the things that come to mind under your theme, what you're thinking of now. What are the pressing issues under each of the four themes, the theme that you're most interested in? You only have to do one. If you're really interested in two, go ahead and do two. But what are some of the biggest challenges and opportunities that you see in peace in the community, peace with the earth, peace in the marketplace and peace among the peoples.
Sure.
Four is okay. And this will be a little bit above average. We'll have 10 minutes for this exercise. But we can pause the tape for 10 minutes.
And what can I do? I mean, we have a
3 more minutes. Could you come back together in about a minute, please? Okay, if you don't mind interrupting your deep deliberations and sharing, we need to share a little bit and discuss and maybe go a bit further with some of your ideas. So I'd be really wanting to hear from each of the groups, and within that, each members who had different points of view. Who wants to go first?
Sure.
We'll take the people by the door.
One thing that occurred to us in addressing, they all had independently three different areas of interest that we picked up, and can't talk about any one of them in isolation. Mm-hmm. because they're all...
Okay.
Like, you can't talk about peace in the marketplace without talking about environmental issues. Mm-hmm.
Can you give us an example that came up?
Without talking about economic issues. The world competition for water, which would mean that in the current scheme of things, there seems to be winners and losers in the competition for water. It impacts the economic balance in those between those contenders for that limited finite resource. So whether you're talking about the state of California and the state of Nevada, for instance, that we're familiar with, or you're talking about Israel and Syria, vis-a-vis, you know, water resource.
Okay.
Just as a simple example.
Further ways you could approach that, or who had the third topic there?
Yeah, I mean, I was just, I don't know, I kind of caught on just this idea that you can't look at any of these in isolation at all. And I kind of zeroed in on the marketplace and the kind of along with peace among other peoples and this fact that some of our just basic interactions with people, we sell things, we trade goods, groups of people are specialized in one area. And that's, you know, it seems to me some of the most basic interactions.
Something to keep in your mind as we talk would be, if we want to go beyond what you identify, is sort of what's the most pressing need in each of the four themes at let's say a global level or a national level, as you're able to name it. But I think it's helpful to start with the kind of concerns you surface by looking at them. Another group? With a comment?
We kind of shared one of the issues that was mentioned, which is it's hard to select a priority when of interconnectedness. But one observation that we made was that one of us was interested in peace among peoples, the other one was peace in the environment, and the peace among the peoples was related as an environmental issue. So I think one of the things that came out is acting locally where you have more impact as opposed to acting at the global level, which is more difficult to put a handle on.
By asking you to choose, the point is, where do you feel engaged or willing to be engaged?
Right.
Because there are different things that are needed, not to deny the interconnection, but
right.
It doesn't have to be a false sort of competition between
right.
the themes. So that's sort of the rationale there. But other comments from that group? You had the
so
brilliant people.
I think just an observation is that we were acting in our area of interest.
Mm-hmm. Particular issues that came up? In your areas of interest, under a theme.
Yeah, I think one of the things that came up was the consumption of our society and how it affects the poverty of another society. The contrast of us consuming so much and a third world country. Lacking so much.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anybody else in the group want to chime in?
Well, we had another group. We first made peace among ourselves and decided we would work on the environment part.
Interesting strategy.
And one of the challenges since we've been involved in remodeling was the difficulty of doing sort of responsible construction.
It sounds tired.
Yes.
they give instructions in between all the stuff, between to the fire.
Like verses of a hymn. Okay, Tim, go for it. You got some.
So we were trying to talk about responsible construction. And what's so interesting was the economy of time and cost of labor end up meaning that nobody has time to recycle anything, to reuse anything. And so you end up, if you go with the way things are done in this country, you basically start again by throwing everything away and starting new because it's less expensive.
How's that related to peace, though?
Well, the peace part is that if you're going to be peaceful with the earth, we have to be using our resources in a responsible way for the good of all.
All right. Other comments from that group?
I just would like a clarification. What you're saying then in that is that instead of being able to fix your toaster with a little part, you throw the toaster away and buy a new toaster because it's cheaper than the little part is going to cost you.
Or it's faster.
Or it's faster to do. Okay. But that's what you're saying. Okay. I agree with you.
In order to keep us somewhat focused, I think we have to go up in space and realize the implications of that kind of behavior. You know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Those ships streaming across the Pacific from China with those cheap toasters, you know, creating 21% of the greenhouse gas. Marine traffic creates 21% of the greenhouse gases, if I'm not wrong. And a large, huge amount of it is those container ships. Shipping from cheap manufacturing countries to consumer countries. So that becomes significant. But you have to also take it from the local to the global, you know, to understand that and act on it.
And just a note, marine petroleum fuel is the largest fuel that is consumed on the planet. More than
air. I'm sorry to hear you say that because we send stuff to a third world country and use those same ships.
I know. Mm-hmm.
Well, the good stuff can still travel. It's the bad stuff. Group in the back.
No, one more comment on that, John. In terms of also thinking about that at the peace level, it's the notion that sometimes we think efficiency is what will help establish peace, and that efficiency does not necessarily mean sustainability. And sustainability would be more in line with a peaceful understanding of environment or a community.
Well, the whole thing about how far things travel to you is incredible, as you know. Okay, let's keep moving to another group because we want to get around. People in the back? Have you been represented? Yes. How about in the very back?
We didn't get very far. Mostly.
Peace is tough. That's okay.
Well, and I think mostly we came to awareness of how little we're doing personally towards peace in a global sense.
Okay.
We talked about other than being politically aware and trying to, you know, do your best that way. But finding the roads, finding the way, finding the organizations, you know, how do we make the first step? I know people who are very involved in the ecological community and so forth. But you know, other than peace in our neighborhoods, when we work, you know, work on our home communities, how do you make that step to help? Propagate the news, get the real news about things you've talked about for the last couple of days.
Okay, yeah, that's tough with our system. Any comments on that from anybody else?
Well, part of the answer, I think, is participation if you happen to be a Lutheran, and Lutheran Peace Fellowship. If you're a member of another denomination, there's probably a Peace Fellowship connected with them.
Okay.
These are organizations that are helpful in educating all of us to options that we have in our own lives and in our own communities, as well as beyond that.
Right. Okay. You know, once at our work, when I was working for Luxembourg Relief, we had a workshop with another agency, and they asked us to, it was a workshop on oppression, really, and racism. And they asked everybody in the room, tell us a time when you felt oppressed, when someone had really done an injustice to you. And it was quite stunning. But most people couldn't name a time when they really had been like the brunt of prejudice. Most of us who look like me. You know, we would say, oh, I didn't get picked for the baseball team in sophomore in high school. You know, it was unfair. But the minorities among us could name an example. No problem. And I wonder if there's a parallel there to our connection to peace, where we are more connected than we realize, but we have to find new ways to understand our connection. So maybe that can come out in this kind of discussion. Thank you for your comment. I think it's very important. This group.
We're all from the same church and the same community. And
so you get along well?
Oh, we do. but we have some interest in all of the four parts.
Okay.
But Carl and I have been working for almost 20 years for peace and justice in the Middle East. So that's where our heart, we've been over to all the countries in the Middle East, in Israel, Palestine, 8 times. And trying to bring back what we've seen and what we've heard and giving programs. And so that's our way of working on that. And travel.
How does travel bring peace?
Well, you're able to realize that the other is much the same as you are. Mm-hmm. And we are all God's children. You might look different. But it really brings it home when we're traveling. And we see people struggling with the same things that we do. Only they have to struggle a lot more than we do.
Okay. And Sue was the person who was spread out a whole bunch of material last night, mm-hmm. yesterday afternoon.
And I still had more than you get what you want.
So you go, you see, you tell,
yeah.
and you raise awareness, and then you do that groundwork.
Right.
For peace among the peoples from here.
Yes.
Well, I guess I need to admit that since I'm here teaching, imaging the gospel, I'm also an international finance consultant, so it's a little bit of a conflict. But the international finance, you know, drove me towards the market, peace in the marketplace, and I'm consistently talking with people from varying cultures, and the number one issue, or two issues for me, are trust and definition. And the more people that are involved in whatever is being worked on, the more complex that trust and definition is, because they're used to working within their own four walls, and if they need to go outside of those four walls, they put up a fifth wall. And those fifth walls all need to get knocked down in order for an open dialogue and exchange to happen. So when I think of peace in the marketplace, for me it's the need for that open dialogue in order to gain that trust. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's the peace that passes all understanding. I think it's the peace that needs it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you run screens on how you advise people to invest in? Do you invest in arms manufacturers?
No. I'm assisting with actually financing humanitarian projects. So secure financing.
So how is that a contradiction with the art? They both sound peaceful to me.
Oh, they're both very peaceful. It's just the pursuit of finance and the pursuit of creativity take very different sides of the brain.
Yeah. Okay. That's why. Is that why you are carrying a cane? Because you...
it makes me limp to the left. Yes.
Thank you for accepting my improper comment. The group behind you.
I was struck in your presentation of the use of the word journey there, and also the answer of travel as a notion of peace. In the Bible studies, we came up with this notion of the Christian faith being the way was a common phrase that came up, and I was just pulling thoughts together. The motto of Christian peacemaker teams is getting in the way. And so I'm thinking about the way and getting in the way.
Okay.
But our group of four, which got a little dispersed with the fire brigade, picked four different themes. Yes, so I'll try to speak for them. We picked, and we weren't able all to speak well, but I was struck with peace with the earth after camping out last night and hearing deer in the middle of the night and mosquitoes and thinking about that, how am I at peace with the earth when there's a tornado comes through or an earthquake or a hurricane and it causes such destruction, or a bear comes and gets you or something like that? How do you begin to be at peace with that? We talked with all these areas of how do people of faith respond was one question there. Can there be justice with peace with the earth was a big question there. Certainly responding with human needs after a disaster or a problem facing the earth. We also spoke about experiences of war veterans and their own experience of relating within their community of different nations and peoples and how to begin to do that and that work of reconciliation. And peace within our community of how to have respect for one another and in face of fears and uncertainty and how to begin to communicate and understand one another.
Which theme would you put war veterans in? Which of the four themes?
Community.
Getting
back to their community.
I think our group somewhat was slotting it between peoples and nations, but I'm sure that can be open for discussion.
How many of you have these people we keep hearing about who's come back from Afghanistan and Iraq who are alive but not doing too well?
Well, I know we've had a number of people in the in the Vietnam era, and many of our Vietnam people that I have run across, similar to the ones that have been over in Japan, are over in Asia, kind of, was that if they hear a gunshot of a backfire of a car, they're ducking or they're about ready to shoot toward where that gunshot came from. And know of a number of our Vietnam people that more of their mental disorientation of them as a mentally unstable and really afraid of anybody that looks Asian when I've worked with some of my Vietnam people.
Thank you. Yeah.
We live close to Fort Lewis, where many of the striker brigades returned. And they brought back the violence within themselves. And it struck out in families, shootings of wives, and some horrible things. But the military family enfolds them and embraces them and walks with them through it.
It seemed to me a huge issue and a real bridge between community and peoples because of the consequences of this war, as we know from previous wars. And talk about a peace ministry to go with those people.
Oh, yeah.
Men and women. To wrap it up for tonight, and maybe tomorrow morning I'll share what some of the things that came out of a similar group I did with a group of Germans. One way to summarize the themes is so that all may live together free from fear. Keeping always in mind the idea of peace. And I think when you're talking about the storms and so on, and the deer and the bear and all that stuff, we obviously need to reflect this to the human community. Not that we're not concerned with the whole created order, but that is our home. But I think what is our responsibility and the impact of those issues on the human community to keep it closer to peace as we understand it, I think. But the peace with the earth, why? So that life can be sustained. I mean, we're dependent on this planet, and we're not sustaining our lives successfully and doing violence to it. So that all may live with dignity, marketplace, dignity, the economic connection with dignity, I think, is perhaps one of the strongest ones. And then finally, so that lives are protected, or so that people are safe, peoples are safe, nations are safe, lives are protected from the mass forms of violence. There's a, if you take off that book, there's a final paragraph for the Declaration. And the Declaration also goes into that question which I raised, which I'd like to spend some time with you on, about where we should go under each of these themes as at the global level as Christians in the 21st century, under this heading, seeking a new unity for peace. And the final paragraph is a nice way to close the evening. A people born to longing. Our home is not what it might and will be. While life in God's hands is irrepressible, peace does not yet reign. The principalities and powers, the not sovereign, still enjoy their victories, and we will be restless and broken until peace prevails. Thus our peace building will of necessity criticize, denounce, advocate, and resist, as well as proclaim, empower, console, reconcile, and heal. Peacemakers will speak against and speak for, tear down and build up, lament and celebrate, grieve and rejoice, until our longing joins our belonging in the consummation of all things in God. Peace work will continue as the flickering of sure grace. And it's really cool to read this at Holden, because how many of those words have we just heard in the last few days? But just to reinforce the idea of peace as a journey, we didn't want to give the impression writing this and working on it and getting... There's been about 200 groups around the world, that seminaries that have done input to this and are reacting to this draft. And by choosing the journey idea, we didn't want to be triumphalistic or unrealistic. And in my own mind, which goes to pictures and metaphors quite often, you can know that peace is coming closer and that violence and war and injustice are going farther away. But when do we expect to reach? Well, on that inclined plane of thy kingdom come. But obviously not until the peace of God, which is in front of us. Which way are we headed? Are we moving? Are we moving together? So things like that, rather than definitive final states. So this nice paragraph, which is from the first draft, actually, we kept as was. Thank you for your attention, and good night. May you have a peaceful night.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.